people displaced in Myanmar amid new fighting. It's Friday, June 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, elderly refugees in Myanmar hit especially hard. Massive food aid heads to North Korea. A possible mass deportation of illegal immigrants. Refugee football and Asian refugees in their own words. It's all on today's VOA Asia. UN Refugee Chief Filippo Grandi says the forcible displacement of more than 70 million people worldwide is a collective failure of the international community and called for more global solidarity to resolve it. The UN Refugee Agency said this week that 70.8 million people were either forced to flee their homelands last year or were displaced within their countries due to conflict, violence, human rights abuses, or persecution. That's 2.3 million more than in 2017. Some 25 million of them are classified as refugees under the UNHCR's mandate. The rest are internally displaced or asylum seekers. The majority come from just five countries: Syria, Afghanistan, South Sudan, Myanmar, and Somalia. But Grandi refuses to accept the idea that the problem is too big to fix. He points to the UN Global Compact on Refugees agreed in December as a roadmap, laying out a framework for a more equitable responsibility sharing and international cooperation. He said it is already improving refugee responses in at least 15 countries. In Myanmar's Kachin State, nearly 100,000 internally displaced people live in camps in territory controlled by the political arm of the insurgent Kachin Independence Army. This month marks renewed fighting between Myanmar's government forces and the KIA, and among the sources of conflict is the control of resources, including jade and potential hydropower projects. Steve Sanford has more from Kachin State in Myanmar.
Kachin civilians said special prayers marking 8 years of renewed conflict and instability in northern Myanmar this month. Many children have spent their entire lives displaced as Myanmar forces and the Kachin Independence Army fight for control over territory. Older residents, like 86-year-old Jangma Gamma, have experienced the war for much longer, since shortly after the Burmese army came to power in 1962.
In my heart, I'm very depressed that we are being suppressed like this. We want our children to have a good education like the other kids, but they can't because we're being persecuted like this.
Aid agencies report that access to the IDPs has been tightened in recent years from the government side of the conflict, increasing difficulties accessing food. Some of the land, once owned by camp residents, is now under development by new companies in the government-controlled areas.
If we go back to our own home, we have to start from zero again. I don't think we can do what we did before the conflict. We will have to start our life all over again.
Ongoing peace talks between the Myanmar military and the KIA have produced little as both sides stand firm on issues of control of resources. It's a common argument shared with many other warring ethnic groups. Meanwhile, the country faces limited growth, mostly in the government-controlled areas.
Whoever wins the next election must make things fair and understand our ethnic people, have an objective of justice between the Myanmar government and our ethnic group.
As Myanmar's 2020 election nears, the unity and growth promised by its leader Aung San Suu Kyi lags while the struggle for balance and equality continues. Steve Sanford for VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit online at voanews.com. North Korea's Kim tells China's Xi he wants to be patient with the United States. No Hong Kong response as activists' deadline passes. Chinese worker killed at power plant brawl in Bangladesh. Experts say global coalition needed to fully enforce sanctions on North Korea. Procedural deadlock leaves future Khmer Rouge tribunal in doubt. Expanded coverage of all these stories and, of course, much more can be found at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Tens of thousands of elderly refugees living in camps in and around Myanmar are being failed by a humanitarian response that is not taking into account their needs, according to Amnesty International. The group's report is based on interviews with hundreds of refugees living in camps in Bangladesh. The crisis began 3 years ago as clashes erupted between ethnic militia and the Myanmar military, forcing millions of Muslim Rohingya people to flee their villages in the northeastern Rakhine state. We have more from Henry Ridgewell.
Kutu Palong in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, the world's biggest refugee camp. Over 600,000 people live here, most of them ethnic Rohingyas from Myanmar. Neighboring camps bring the total number of refugees in the region to close to 1 million. They have fled brutal attacks by the Myanmar military and spiraling conflict between ethnic militia. While younger people are able to escape the attacks on their villages, the older residents often stay put. Mariam Khatun fled with her three children when Myanmar soldiers entered her village in Maungdor Township.
When the soldiers came and set houses on fire, my parents were inside. My parents hadn't been able to move on their own for 5 years. We couldn't take them with us when we fled. We crossed the river. My parents were burned to death when the house was torched.
The elderly Rohingya who are able to reach the refugee camps face another set of challenges. Amnesty says they are frequently unable to access basic facilities.
Much of the infrastructure set up in terms of the humanitarian response is based around an assumption of being able to get to a distribution point or a water point or a camp clinic. And if physically you are unable to walk up and down the hills of the Bangladesh refugee camps to get to a latrine or a water point or a camp clinic, then those are inaccessible to you.
Many of the elderly refugees have been forced to flee their homes three or more times during their lives.
Everything was burning. The security forces were in the village. They were torching homes from one side to the other.
The Myanmar government argues it is safe for the refugees to return, but authorities are refusing to give the Rohingya full citizenship or allow them to return to their homes.
The question here is about when is the right time for the Rohingya to return to Myanmar. In order for this to happen, the conditions in Myanmar need to be in place for there to be a safe, dignified, and long-term solution.
Until that happens, Amnesty says the vast aid operation must take greater account of the specific needs of the elderly refugees. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, Chinese state media reports North Korean leader Kim Jong-un told Chinese President Xi Jinping he would like to be patient with the United States over stalled nuclear talks and expressed hope the relevant party will meet halfway with Pyongyang. Xi's trip is the first by a Chinese leader to North Korea in 14 years. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. As we first mentioned on VOA Asia yesterday, the World Food Program reports South Korea has made a large donation of rice and money to its northern neighbor to provide essential nutrition to millions of children, pregnant and nursing mothers. We have more details now as we hear from Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA from Geneva.
Millions of people in North Korea are short of food. Perpetually hungry children and pregnant and nursing mothers are suffering the most. The World Food Program reports South Korea's landmark donation, the biggest in more than a decade, will help ease the nutritional crisis faced by 2 million of this particularly vulnerable group of people. Under an agreement worked out by WFP between both countries, South Korea will donate 50,000 metric tons of rice and $4.5 million in cash for food needs in North Korea. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoosel tells VOA that South Korea's donation indicates the country's political will to help the North at this critical time.
The South Korean government will assess the way that the donation is distributed in North Korea, and if they see that it's well organized and that give results helping the people in need, then they will potentially take additional decision for additional support in the future.
An assessment mission by the Food and Agriculture Organization and WFP last month finds more than 10 million people are suffering from severe food shortages following the worst harvest in a decade. The agencies report that the nutrition crisis in North Korea is particularly acute in rural areas. They note rates of chronic malnutrition are as high as 43% and that one in five children is stunted. The World Food Program currently is feeding 770,000 people. Ferhusel says WFP would like to scale up its operation to include many more of the 10 million people at risk, but a mammoth operation like that would cost $275 million, an amount that is far out of reach. He says WFP has seven principal donors, including Canada, France, Switzerland, and Russia. He says the United States does not participate in or provide money to WFP's humanitarian operation in North Korea. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, a chilling prospect for many living in the United States. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news from VOA Asia, a deadline imposed by activist groups for Hong Kong's government to scrap highly unpopular extradition bills and accept other demands, passed Thursday without an official response. The groups have said they will call on supporters to surround government headquarters if their demands are not met. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, before announcing his bid for re-election this week, U.S. President Donald Trump claimed that U.S. immigration authorities would begin removing millions of undocumented immigrants from the country. While some argue that his threats amount to nothing more than heated campaign rhetoric, his message comes as a dire warning to millions. We have more from VOA's Ramon Taylor.
Officially kicking off his re-election campaign, President Trump echoed some familiar themes.
We believe our country should be a sanctuary for law-abiding citizens, not for criminal aliens.
His rally comes a day after a barrage of late Monday evening tweets in which he warned that immigration authorities would conduct mass deportations beginning next week. Such an operation would require hundreds or thousands of agents and law enforcement personnel who are already overextended. Proponents argue for more resources.
I think the first thing that has to happen is the government has to have the capacity and the ability and resources to enforce the law. In other words, end the border crisis and make sure that ICE can do its job for the most part in the interior.
The timing of President Trump's announcement raised red flags regarding his intentions. But opponents warn his rhetoric has already proven to have consequences.
I think we can't put it past the federal government to do what they are saying they want to do, because obviously we saw that they went ahead with the plan to separate families at the border. And, you know, as heinous and as horrible as that was, that did not stop them from going ahead with that, right? So I think we have to take them at their word that they're going to try and do that here.
Immigration attorney Matthew Cameron says a massive roundup operation is simply not possible. But he has no doubt that fear will set in among undocumented communities anyway.
That means that people aren't going to go to their medical appointments. They're not going to go take their kids to school. They're going to skip days on the job if they really believe that there's a possibility.
On the same evening he threatened mass deportations, President Trump said the United States was preparing to sign a safe third country agreement with Guatemala, a measure that would prevent Central Americans fleeing persecution from applying for asylum in the U.S. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
This latest news from VOA Asia. Hundreds of police have been called in to keep the peace after a fight between Chinese and Bangladeshi workers at a power plant in south central Bangladesh left a Chinese worker dead and at least seven others injured. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, throughout June, observed as World Refugee Awareness Month, activists are working to spotlight the stories of about 70 million refugees and displaced people around the world. People from all walks of life take steps big and small to shed a positive light on refugees and help them connect with their new communities. Some local groups here in Washington got together to do just that through the power of sports. VOA's June So has more in this story, narrated by Mary Alice Salinas.
On a recent Saturday, children and adults from across the Washington area had fun kicking soccer balls on a field of a local high school. Abdul Wahidi, whose family fled Afghanistan 2 years ago, was among them.
There's the war problem in the school. There is two-day school, three-day not school. And my father decided to leave the country. When I come to this country, I start play soccer from last year. I meet some friends from African friends from other country. Soccer make me happy.
The first annual Refugee Community Soccer Day was organized by One Journey in collaboration with other groups. One Journey is a grassroots movement in the nation's capital working to raise awareness of the global refugee crisis.
Today we had people, refugees from the refugee community, as well as just larger community members, all coming together and playing soccer together. The purpose of it is all to bring people together and to sort of show their common humanity over a love of soccer.
One of the partner groups is Life and Change Experience Through Sports, or LACES. Founder Serene Fryett brought 40 refugee children.
Soccer crosses cultural barriers. It brings people together, youth especially, kids who come from different cultures. You put a soccer ball in front of them and it becomes a common language. They don't have to speak the same language, but yet they can play with one another. And today was a perfect example, and what the goal of the Refugee Community Soccer Day was, is to bring groups of people together who wouldn't normally connect and find a common bond.
That was Mohammed Hashimi's experience.
I'm from Afghanistan. Playing soccer makes me feel really, really happy and really social. It's really fun to play, and it's really a way to speak to someone else in a different way.
Another nonprofit community group, District Sports, and Washington's Major League Soccer team, DC United, joined forces to help children and adults work on drills and play different games.
We're really happy to have our mascot and player out today and to really welcome these refugees to our community and the city that we call home.
The organizers say the inaugural gathering was a success, with 200 people joining in. And they expect the connections they made to continue for years to come. For producer June So, Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, Washington.
VOA journalists have spoken with many refugees from all over the world as we compiled many stories for World Refugee Day and all of June as World Refugee Awareness Month. We close with five refugees telling of their experiences themselves, all originally from Asian countries, who have now settled in the United States pursuing their dreams in a new, safe home. You'll hear first from North Korean refugee Grace Cho, then Vietnamese and MMA fighter Teo Relang, Cambodian refugee Janet Song, Rohingya refugee from Burma Karim, and finally, a Laos refugee who followed her father to the United States.
I think my mother, she thought leaving my country was the only way to survive in this world. So that's why she took remaining two daughters, which is me and my older sister, to China. I worked at the dry cleaner. It was a Korean-American owner's dry cleaner, and I worked for 3 months there as a first to work. I'm currently attending college right now, and I'm also working as a treatment coordinator at dental office. To be like a refugee, I feel like finding new identity as an independent human being in freedom country is the very meaningful thing as a refugee. If I had to go over again, then yes, I will definitely choose to leave my country again, because right now I'm enjoying freedom and I can live as a human being.
My name is Theo Le Yang. I am an MMA fighter. Came to the United States in 2002. Came here as a refugee to have a better life. We grew up in like poverty, back where like we didn't have much at all to eat. My mom told me stories. Sometimes I would eat dirt, making like rice, and I eat it because like we didn't have much at all. I was 8 years old. I was in my bed at the time, sleeping in my house, and my dad just woke me up. We went to, he carried me on his back, went through the jungles in Vietnam, and then it was like very, very scary for me. So I was a little shy and get bullied a lot too. So because I was weaker and smaller. I would love to come back to Vietnam and fight over there too. Vietnam is also my home. That's where I grew up too. Because one day I want to like represent Vietnam too, like when I fight.
By the time we escaped from the Khmer Rouge, our home was up for grabs. The last trip that they relocate us was to America. The first 3 days we stay in America, we cannot find food. Food was very close to home, but we didn't know the way they sell food was indoor in a grocery store. We walk in the morning, we expect to see market just like in Cambodia or in Thailand. I was able to get education. I worked very hard, and life in America, it's like you cannot ask for any better than that, the opportunity. Right now I am a financial analyst. This whole experience, it was hard life, opportunity, and determination to make a life for myself and my family.
I am from Burma, Rohingya. I left country years 2001. That time I was 21 years, and now I am 35 years. Number one thing, the Rohingya people, they are denied citizenship. Now I live in Washington, D.C., United States. And when I came first time, and I don't know anybody here. My first job is a factory, is a call Amazon. Now I am a salesman, and I am happy with that. And I feel freedom here. I'm happy, very happy. When I arrived at the United States, so I feel I know what is the human basic right. As a human, what is our right and our freedom?
I left Laos when I was 4 years old, when my father had to escape from the being put into seminars or work camps in Laos. And so our families had to escape until we came to the United States. And so when I came at four, my parents started working as machine operators in Connecticut. I think it was harder for my parents, who had to come to a country where they didn't know the language and didn't know the sort of the school system and how to find jobs. Growing up, I thought that everybody went to a refugee camp. So as a young child, I would ask my friends, oh, what refugee camp did you go to? I currently work as an associate professor in the College of Education here at University of Massachusetts Lowell, where I think it's good for everyone to really have compassion for people who come here out of necessity because of war or trauma.
VOA Asia's Anna Cook gathered that sampling from the millions of refugees around the world and the thousands who have come here to the United States. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll also find us on the radio throughout Asia. Voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan, carries our program. We thank everyone there who's listened to it today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We'll see you again next week.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English